Barbarian tribes of Rome, the Anglo-Saxons, the Heptarchy, first East Anglia. Now, when William the Conqueror took over, island politics were heavily reliant on the so-called Seven Kingdoms, which were active at the time, collectively called the Heptarchy, or the Rule of the Seven. There were, of course, minor kingdoms, and some of these minor kingdoms would even grow to create major ones, but not at this point. According to historians, the Seven Kingdoms of early medieval Britain, also known as petty kingdoms, were as follows: East Anglia, Northumbria, Mercia, Wessex, Sussex, Essex, and Kent. They would each come together to dominate one another at certain points in history, but their unification was inevitable, even before William set foot in Britain. So we're going to start with East Anglia. As the name suggests, East Anglia was the kingdom primarily inhabited by the Angles. Its territory took up the northern day counties of Suffolk and Norfolk, though historians suggest it stretched a little bit further than that. In terms of tribal hidage, East Anglia covered an area of 30,000 hides of land. They were ruled by the kings from the Wulfgas dynasty. In their early days, the Wulfgas were pagan, but the coming of King Redwald, they began to slowly process into converting to Christianity. Of course, East Anglia's history began much earlier than that. Somewhere around 450 CE, the Angles were already settling in the area, occupying the old Roman cities of Venta and Ercorium. As they slowly began to settle, their kings grew in power and slowly began to clash with other local rulers. One interesting fact to note about East Anglia is that it was probably the first area in Britain where English was spoken, or rather Old English to be precise. This isn't a surprise considering that this area was one of the earliest Anglo-Saxon settlements in sub-Roman Britain. Linguists and scholars have studied place names, coin inscriptions, personal names, and old texts to uncover the linguistic background of the region. They discovered that the East Anglian people had their own dialect, just like Mercian, the Kentish, the West Saxons, and the Northumbrians did. However, it's very hard to confirm this and with any authority, considering that we literally have no written sources from that era that directly come from East Anglia. We can't emphasize enough how sad it is that no documents such as wills, charters, or anything else have survived that were written by the East Angles. Even their direct history, such as the list of kings and battles, come to us from outside sources, such as Venerable Bede and the Anglo-Saxon Chronicles. Based on the limited information that we have, we can confirm a few basic facts. The Wulfgas ruled over East Anglia until 749. When their last king died. After that, they either fell to the Mercian rule or to the rule of the kings whose lineage our history doesn't recognize. By the early 9th century, East Anglia had regained its independence, and not long after they did, the Vikings began their raids. Like a lot of eastern kingdoms, East Anglia was incorporated in the Danelaw, common name for parts of England that were under direct Danish or Viking rule, only to be reclaimed by Edward the Elder several decades later. The final decades of East Anglia were filled with political turmoil as ownership of it shifted from Anglo-Saxons to Danes. The last known Danish ruler over the region was Canute the Great, who appointed Thorkeld the Tall to rule as the Earl of East Anglia in 1017. Now, the only East Anglican dynasty that we have data on that were the Wulfgas. They claim to be descendants of Wulfa, a semi-mythological king, and their name in Old English means children of the wolf. Wulfa had ruled the late 6th century, if he was a historical king. Most sources mention him as the father of Tailta, the grandfather of Redwald, and the founder of the dynasty. However, some sources claim that another ruler preceded him, namely his supposed father, Weha. Raywald of East Anglia was without a doubt the most famous of all the East Anglican kings. He ruled the kingdom from 599 to 624. He was by no means the only powerful ruler of this time period. Ethelbert of Kent was also in power when Redwald ascended the throne and had in fact married Bertha at least a decade and a half prior. Other kings were in power at the time were Ceolwulf of Wessex, Alfrith of Mercia, and Piba, who supposedly founded Mercia in 585. Redwald reigned for 25 years. During that time, according to Bede, he was an overlord of several southern kingdoms and the fourth, Bretwalda. His early years mark him as a pagan king, but when Augustine landed in Kent, he traveled south to the court of King Ethelbert Once there, Redwald and another king, Sibrith of Essex, were baptized, and each of their kingdoms received bishoprics. This would make Redwald the first Anglian king to convert to Christianity. His son, Eorpwald, also converted, though he did this much later in life. However, once he ascended the throne after Redwald's death in 624, he was usurped and killed by a pagan noble called Ricbert. The same noble might have even ruled over East Anglia for a few years before Wulfgus reclaimed the throne. With the region falling back on paganism as Kent did after the death of King Ethelbert the decade later, Redwald effectively became an overlord of the nearby kingdoms after the death of King Ethelbert. We don't know a lot about the details of the early years of his reign, however. It is possible the greatest historical event that involved East Anglian king and what we know about the disposition of Edwin of Northumbria is the Battle of the River Idle. Erwin was not really the king of Northumbria. He was actually born in Daria, one of the two kingdoms that would make up the new land called Northumbria. A second kingdom, Bernicia, was ruled by Athelfirth, who wanted to depose and ultimately kill Edwin. He took control of both kingdoms in 604. Edwin was exiled and sought refuge in several different kingdoms, such as the Celtic Gwynedd, Mercia, and finally East Anglia. Initially, Redwald received the exile Edwin and refused to sell him out to Athelfrith. However, after multiple attempts by the Bernician and Darian king, Redwald caved, which according to written sources, his pagan wife shamed him for it. It was supposedly because of the shaming that Redwald, alongside Reginhaire, his son, and Edwin of Daria, faced Athelfrith in the Battle of the River Idle in either 616 or 617. The resulting clash was so bloody that it became ingrained in the English collective memory with the phrase, quote, "The River Idle was foul with the blood of Englishmen," end of quote, still looming today. Redwald lost his son that day, but he managed to kill the Bernician king and destroy his troops. Edwin was then crowned king of the new kingdom, Northumbria, while Redwald became the first king to leave to have significant influence in politics over a separate independent kingdom. The king himself ruled uncontested until 624 when he died, and his son Eorpwald took over the throne. Historians argue that the princely burial at Sutton Hoo, with its massive boat and elegant gifts, was that of Redwald himself. Some speculate that his son was either buried next to it in a smaller mound, or that he was the one buried in the boat and not his father. However, we don't have written or archaeological evidence to corroborate either option. Then we have Anna of East Anglia. Let the name fool you. Anna was very much a man, sometimes recorded as Ona. This king was the nephew of Redwald and the son of Eni, makes him one of the Wulfgas. He succeeded Ecgric, his relative from the same family, though we don't know exactly what their relationship was. They could have been brothers, cousins, or something else entirely. Anna was famously praised by Bede for being a good Christian. All of his children, one son, and either three or four daughters were canonized as saints. Thanks to his influence, Sethel of Wessex converted as well during his exile in East Anglia. Anna was famous for securing political marriages for his daughters. Sexbirth, the oldest daughter, was married to Ensofbirth of Kent, allying the two kingdoms. In 652, he married his second daughter, Athelthryth, to Thondbrecht of South Grön, and Anna himself was married to a noblewoman called Sarah. During Anna's reigns, Penda of Mercia became a powerful monarch. In 651, the Mercian king attacked the monastery of Kevelsburg, but forcing Anna into exile. 2 years later, he returned to East Anglia, but soon afterwards, East Anglian and Mercian forces would clash at Bolkamp. Both Anna and his son, German, were killed in the battle, leaving his brother, Athelhair, as the successor on the throne. Now, among the Wulfgas, other notable kings include Sigbreth, Edwald, and Alfwald. Sigbert was the first English king to be educated and baptized before he ascended the throne. In addition, he probably didn't rule alone, but shared the kingly duties with his cousin, Ecgric. After his abdication, Ecgric would continue to rule alone. Aldwulf, the son of Athelric, and the grandson of Eni, and his reign is known for being uncharacteristically peaceful and prosperous, mainly because Gipswick, today's Ipswich, was expanding at the time. His death in 713 brought Ethelwald to the throne, and he would rule for 36 years, with his reign being equally peaceful and prosperous. During this time, coin minting expanded and trade with continental Europe bloomed, since there are no records of a direct heir and because of the conflicting information over who ruled East Anglia after his death, we can safely say that Ethelwald was the last of the Wulfgots to sit on the East Anglican throne. Now, hopefully, I didn't kill their names. It was a little bit troublesome to be going through these particular characters. Hopefully, it'll get a little easier as next time we're going to Kent. Now, the sources for this, The Germanic People, Their Origin, Expansion, and Culture, by Owens, Attila the Hun, by Worrell, The Burgundians, by Charles River, The History of the Ostrogoths, by Burns, and The History of the Vandals, by Jacobson, as well as The History of the Barbarians. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, sumahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.